Hello, podcast listener. You're listening to a Halford and Brough podcast, and I'm using my podcast voice. You can listen to us on Google, Apple, Spotify. It's the Halford and Brough podcast, and thank you for listening.
7:03 on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dallari family of Acura dealers. I said this off the top. I'll reiterate it again now that we're into hour two. Just because you bought your Acura from a non-Dallari dealer, it doesn't mean that you can't bring your Acura to any of the three Dallari dealerships for servicing. North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. They want everybody to know this. They have premier customer service, premier vehicle service. So if you have an Acura and it needs some work done, bring it in. Experience the Dallari difference today.
Next Friday, December 10th, between 6 and 6, in partnership with Boyd Auto Body and Glass, it's Food Bank Friday. Again, that's next Friday, December 10th. The day that I'm heading to Edmonton to go to West Edmonton Mall.
One of those classic December Edmonton vacations.
We all know the importance of the food bank, especially at this time of the year. In fact, any time of the year. I guess this is kind of a fun way to donate. You can text a carrot emoji.
That does sound fun.
To 30333 to donate $5. Text a banana emoji to 30333 to donate $10, and to donate $25, text a red heart emoji to 30333. You can also make cash donations online. All the details at sportsnet.ca/650.
To answer the question, yes, we're getting all your texts about the eggplant emojis. Grow up, okay? Grow up. We would not make those kind of jokes here on the Halford and Brough Show. We're above that.
Thomas Drentz is going to join us at 7:30. We'll talk about the Canucks.
It's an eggplant.
If you want.
It's purple.
And then at 8:30, Chris Ballard.
Yeah, I've got his article up here right now. It's called, How Long Can We Play? The Quest to Prolong Athletic Mortality. It sounds big and it sounds overwhelming. All it is, asking a bunch of beer leaguers, how long are you going to keep doing this for, bud? Really? And what's the end game? Is there an end game? Is there a strategy? Is there an out, an exit strategy?
He mentioned HGH in the article, and I was like, is that legal? Is that where do you get that?
He mentioned a lot of things. Mm-hmm.
Right? But I kind of keyed in on the HGH.
Is that an option for me?
Is that an option?
He seems eerily focused on the HGH. Well, no, there is a good chunk of the article talking about the origins of performance-enhancing substances.
But he was talking about it in that it's not just professional athletes and people at elite levels that are, I don't know, I guess that's cheating, HGH, but...
Yes.
But there are regular Joes.
Well, wealthy regular Joes.
Wealthy, is it expensive to...
Yes.
Well, where
yes.
do you get it from? Do you think Chris will tell us?
I doubt it. Again, we're
going
to
high-end HGH.
What is the downside to HGH?
I've heard Russia has a big supply.
This is the second time Brough's talked about this article and really not focused on the key part of it. Where can I score some HGH being the number one takeaway?
Dean in Victoria texted in, and we've asked for all your thoughts on this, about your thoughts about getting older and still playing sports, whether you still want to. What's the key to the – I think the big question is, how do you still enjoy them if you're getting older and slower and you're not as good? Dean in Victoria, hey, guys, I'm 53, and I've been playing beer league hockey for the same team for 13 years. Many of the guys are older. One guy is 72, and we are looking at our third trip to Prague for a tournament next fall. I plan to play for several more years, and I find it's the friendship and the camaraderie that drive me. But if the only option to play was drop-in hockey with guys I didn't know, I think I'd hang them up. That is where I am with my team right
you
now.
You got buddies on the team, don't you?
Yeah, and it's fun to hang out with them. And some of them are younger than me, so the important thing is a lot of them are in their 30s, and so I still get invited on stags.
That's good. See, you need that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing: you brought up a good point. You said I like hanging out with them. The postscript to that sentence should have been, but it's depressing letting them down so frequently on the ice.
And half the time you wonder, do they wish I wasn't on this team?
And you know what? What he's talking about, Dean from Victoria is talking about in the text here. I mean, all due respect, that's more like a group of people that have something in common. I don't want to call you hobbyists, but if you know, you're out there for the purpose of hanging out, getting some exercise and activity. And I would imagine that none of them probably are too bent out of shape if they get worse at it. There is another angle to all of this, though.
No, I bet some of those guys are competitive.
Well, I don't want to speak for Dean and Victoria anyway.
Right,
if
they're playing into their 50s, 60s, and 70s, then I bet they're competitive people during their lives.
I want to focus on the other part of this, which is when do you got to call it quits? That's the one that's interesting for me, because there's some people that are like, I wish I could be like Dean and Victoria and his buddies playing into my 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s, but my body won't allow it anymore. Now, I haven't gotten there. Like, it's funny, you were asking me, like, it doesn't seem to bother me too much. So there was a stretch where, and I don't know why I did this, but I went up to Vernon and I tried water skiing for the first time. I was 41.
Yeah.
That was a bad idea.
I did the same in the 40s. Water skiing took me out.
Yeah. I tore my hamstring. And it was just, it was a yard sale of an explosion into the water is how I would classify it. Well, along with it, my hamstring exploded. So I did that, and I'm like, well, you know what? I have a reason to get it better and get healthy, because I want to play soccer still. So went through all of it, went to physio, did all that nonsense. It wasn't fun. Got back and played. Second game I came back and played, a guy ran into me and I cracked my collarbone.
Mm-hmm.
That was the most painful night of sleep I've ever had in my life. Because I was like, oh, I'll just, you know, have a bunch of beers and it'll go away. Shockingly, it didn't work that way. I woke up at 3:30 in the morning in screaming pain.
Mm-hmm. Did you actually scream?
Yeah. I was like, what is going on? I'm like, oh, the booze wore off. So anyway,
Was it more painful than my swimmer's ear, do you think?
Probably. But
I doubt it.
You know, I don't want to diminish your plight.
Yeah.
Now, I'll say this. It was the same song and dance. Go back, go to the doctor, get x-rays, get an MRI. You can't really rehab. You just have to rest and relax. I did this for an entire season where I would get hurt and then stubbornly, dare I say stupidly, just work back at it.
Because the alternative is what? Just letting yourself go?
No, but you don't even think of it in those terms. I think a lot of people, and here's the big thing. I could go day to day. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but we don't have the most physically demanding jobs on earth. So I could go and get hurt. And, you know, the old adage with everyone is like, we all got to work on Monday, pal. Some people really have to do tough jobs.
Important stuff.
Yeah. Either they got to be on their feet all the time, or, you know, they're swinging a hammer, or they're delivering stuff where it's like physical labor.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't go and hurt yourself because you literally can't do your job. And thankfully, I'm very fortunate to never have to really put that into the equation, because quite honestly, there's times where I'll go out and we'll practice on a really cold field, and I'm playing goal for soccer. So we'll train for like an hour and a half, and I'll be bouncing off cold, hard turf, right? Because that's what you do. You're diving.
Is the turf
around.
Okay?
The turf is like, please stop. I've had enough. And then I wake up the next day, and you hurt for 2 or 3 days. I actually for a while liked that, because I was like, it made me feel in a weird way
alive.
Now, I'm not getting into Fight Club territory here,
right.
But I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also realized, like, I would like it less if I had to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and then spend 8 hours on my feet doing hard physical labor. It wouldn't be as romanticized as I've made it.
We've got a lot of texts into the Dunbar Lumber text line about this, because let's be honest, this is both a relevant topic for a lot of people. If you're listening to sports radio, chances are you've played sports.
Yeah, and you probably still are.
Yeah, exactly. And also, it's funny to listen to people. And the story is about getting old.
Well, can I just jump in real quick? Because someone asked, they said, with all the injuries I just ran off, is Halford made out of glass? I never had any injuries prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, time looked at me and is like, your ass is due for a lot of them. And then I had 5 in a row. I also tore the meniscus in my knee when I came back the third time.
Right.
Everything just fell apart at once.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Father Time. Like,
you
the
taking,
checks are due.
Are you taking care of yourself? Are you eating right?
Yeah. Like, I
are you lying to me right now?
No. Because once, you know what the funny thing is now it's like I think I've been a little bit more smart about approaching it. Definitely less reckless and throwing myself back into things. But yeah, I had a bunch of injuries in a row, 3 in a row.
Jim in Richmond texts in, fellas, I'm 51 and play soccer ice, and field hockey as a goalie. I'm playing until I can't anymore. I can't imagine never playing anything. Scares the living bejesus out of me.
I can't imagine not playing.
Does this enter into the mortality conversation?
Sure. Without question.
Yeah.
Because there's got to be an acknowledgement that you're stopping. Like, I want to do that, play sports, but I can't anymore.
Right. And which is something that happens to old people.
But yeah, and maybe you go through the seven stages of grief. Like maybe there's denial. Like I can still do this. Like you with hockey every time you play. But you know, I think at a certain point, and really we're talking about two different things. We're talking about one. You're talking about more like I'm going to quit this because I'm bad at it.
Mm-hmm.
Other people are saying I have to quit this because I physically can't do it anymore. Those are two separate conversations, right?
Oh, for sure it is, and I am. It doesn't sound like it, but I am quite thankful for the fact that I do have the option to go out and be bad at hockey.
Mm-hmm.
We got a text in here. Played hockey with the same beer league team until I was taken down by a massive heart attack on the ice 2 years ago. After rehab, I'm 54 and playing in a 3-on-3 league. My son is our goalie, and I intend to play until he retires. And then it's unsigned. This is how he ends it. Quitting would be death. The heart attack nearly was, too, though, I imagine.
Glad someone said it. It's out there. I mean, that's another like reality of it too. Is the older you get out there, the more physically exerting it becomes. It's those kind of things can happen.
Aren't there leagues though, guys? Like Masters in soccer.
Yeah,
like that's a league where you're playing against men who are your age. You're all in your 40s. Mm-hmm.
See,
your
here's
50s.
The thing: the aging curve. You don't realize this, but so Masters is 35 and older.
Yeah,
and then you're allowed three underagers, so guys that are 32. The difference between a guy, quote-unquote, breaking into the league in his early to mid-30s and a guy over the age of 40, there's a big difference.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah. Even though 20-year-olds are looking at this and they're like, what are you talking about? Like, you guys are all the same age. You guys are all doing the same things. No. Every year you get older, the gap goes by seven. It's like dog years.
It's like the 50-year-olds dominating the Champions Tour in golf.
Yeah.
Except for Bernhard Langer somehow.
Yeah. That's the thing, is you get that.
He's my hero.
Yeah,
he's my sports hero, still winning tournaments in his 60s.
Yeah, but how old do you have to be on the Champions Tour?
50,
right?
Yeah.
So if you're right on the nose 50, you're a young buck on the Champions Tour, and you're killing it because you're not that far removed.
Yeah, Mickelson goes out there now.
And lays out bombs.
That reminds me, Jason, you should take solace in the fact that when you pull up to the country club, you're still one of the young guys. You still have decades before you're considered old on the golf course.
I just wish I had the money to join a country club. Wouldn't that be nice? Here's a text that I found very funny. Unsigned text. Talking about giving up sports sounds more depressing than the train wreck known as the Canucks. We did it, folks. We found a way to make the Halford and Brough show more depressing.
Somehow.
Should we talk about the Seahawks now? Because that was depressing last night.
Let's keep the depression theme running.
Let's talk about the Seahawks. Someone texted in and accused us of being scared to talk about the Seahawks. And I get it. If you've listened to our show for years, let's just say, going back to the old station.
And if so, why?
You have heard us fawn over Russell Wilson. I don't think there's an athlete in the world that Halford and I have both fawned over like we have fawned over Russell Wilson in the past. We completely bought in to everything that Russell Wilson was selling. It used to be like, yeah, maybe Russ is a bit cheesy, but we love him for it. He helped deliver us what we wanted, and that was a Super Bowl for the Seattle Seahawks. Yeah, he had help, but things really changed for the Seahawks when he showed up. That relationship has changed.
We did not mention the Seahawks Monday night football game, primetime, in the first hour and 17 minutes of our show.
I feel like I'm going through a breakup with Russell Wilson, watching him play.
They're terrible.
The magic.
There's a lot wrong.
The
right
magic
now.
Is over for Russ. I know he had the last second touchdown throw last night, but his throw was off on the 2-point conversion. And his throw was off all night.
So I was listening to a couple analysts speak in the aftermath last night, including a couple of former NFL players. He's obviously come back too soon from this finger injury. Like they're saying, just watch him. Watch him throw a football right now. He can't throw a football. And it could be because, you know, his finger was mangled on his throwing hand. Now, God bless him. there, and now there's a lot
of... let us know, too.
Right. That was the thing, is that we want to talk about athletic mortality. There's a certain point where your body says, nope, you can't do that right now. You need to stop and let your body heal, or your body's broken, you can't fix it. Wilson's obviously in the former, but here's the thing.
I think there's something mental going on, too, with him. He's lost. I think the magic is gone.
But let me...
The confidence is gone.
Okay. Well, we can give him some crystals and sage, and I'm sure he can get that back on track, but... I'm talking about...
Maybe he's got the same thing Petey has.
I'm talking about what we saw on film that the guys were running through last night. And there were numerous throws that any above-average quarterback is going to make. And Russell Wilson, being well above average throughout his NFL career, would make them. And he was way off. The other thing I'll add, as a little anecdote here, do you know what yesterday was, November 29th?
His birthday?
Russell Wilson's 33rd birthday. 33 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that we joke about Russ being a great overcomer and him using that term and not even... anyway. but
no shame in his game.
But here's the thing. You know, despite the fact that there's this quest for athletic immortality and guys defying age, Father Time, as the old adage states, always wins. Remained undefeated is always going to come and get you. And this right now, one of the angles with this is he felt compelled to get back as quickly as he could because Geno Smith obviously wasn't going to help them get to the playoffs, and he's Russell Wilson. He can beat anything,
mm-hmm.
right? He's one of the greatest quarterbacks of his generation. He's a Hall of Famer. He's won a Super Bowl. This was something that you can't just be positive about and mentally overcome. Like, if you think it's going to happen, it's going to happen, because the reality is playing out on the field. They look awful on offense.
Well, they look awful on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
It was Colt McCoy who picked them apart the week prior, and Taylor Heinicke does it now. Have you seen the time of possession for the Seahawks?
Well,
they're averaging this season 25 minutes of possession, and that's one of the lowest in recent history. And it's a both things. Like, it's the defense can't get off the field. They rarely get takeaways. They get picked apart by average quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And it's also the Seahawks, especially on third down, they've been dreadful. So
fourth down yesterday as well. And if you missed that, the kicker for Joey Sly for the Redskins, the Washington football team. You see Steve Levy at the end of the game called them the Redskins last night.
Did he?
Yeah, apparently he's done it a few times this year. Their kicker got hurt, so they went for it on fourth down
mm-hmm.
repeatedly. So that last drive that the football team put forth was something in the name of like 12 plays, 10 minutes, one of those Army-Navy type drives. But the Seahawks couldn't stop them. Even on the play that got overturned, it was that close to being a touchdown and game over for the Seahawks.
Are you willing to admit something that I've been saying for months now about the Seahawks? That it is over, and
oh, yeah.
you need to blow it up.
Oh, yeah, it's over.
Trade Russ? Yes, that would be... See, is no. it over? It's over. Trade Russ?
I think if you need something to build around, it would be him.
That was the sound of Halford going, I don't want to trade Russ.
Like Pete's done.
You know what? You know what I got worried about last night watching Russ? Oh, God. Are they even going to be able to get much for him?
Well...
We had Mike Tannier on yesterday and said, what do you think the Seahawks could get for Russ? And he's talking about two first-round draft picks. Okay, I would take that right now. Because like guess what? The Jets have the Seahawks' first-round pick this year.
I think a proper gutting is in order. Like, coordinator's gone, Carroll gone. I don't know if Schneider survives this because he was the architect.
I would trade
thing.
Everyone they can and just try and rebuild it.
Right. And now, I will say this. They look like they're completely out of answers. This is about the third or fourth time that I've seen Pete Carroll at a post-game presser where he has no answers for what went wrong. Our good buddy Brady Henderson was firing some questions at him yesterday, and all Pete kept saying was, I got to go look at the film. I can't tell you that right now. I don't know. And I just feel like for the first time in that era, because remember, there's been a lot of success, there's failure. And there's no understanding of why they're failing. Now, it could be him trying to protect the team and protect and not spill stuff to the media. But I genuinely believe that they don't know what's gone wrong. And it's because there's so many things that have gone wrong.
Curtis in White Rock, Texan, Mr. Unlimited, and his unwavering, in quotes, self-confidence, seems to be all smoke and mirrors lately. He looks like he can't get out of his own head. Yeah, I feel that too. Mm-hmm. I don't think the finger injury is helping. And by the way, how many times do we have this conversation about struggling athletes? Is he hurt or is it mental?
Right.
Right? Like how many times, like we've had a conversation about Petey. We had the conversation about Tiger Woods when he was recovering from his various injuries before he won.
But it's funny,
you know, Masters.
It's funny with Russ because that mentality is kind of what the team's mantra and identity has been. It's like they just don't
always believe in Russ, though, that
right.
Russ will save the day.
So, I don't know,
but he's not saving the day now.
I don't know if you saw what DK Metcalf put out prior to the game against Washington. He tweeted out 7 in a row, meaning we're going to go and win 7 in a row and make the playoffs.
Uh-huh.
How delusional do you have to be to think that you're going to run the table when going into that game, you're 3-7, your offense is putrid, and you've shown no signs of that.
Apparently, Russ, after the game, the various reports, and I think Pete Carroll said it as well, was that Russ was very, quote-unquote, accountable to his teammates in the dressing room after the game, mm-hmm. which probably means, guys, I'm not playing very well here.
Well, Pete said it in the post-game presser yesterday. He's like, he has to be better, referring mm-hmm. to Russell Wilson. And you know, Pete Carroll doesn't often do that. Right, he protects his guys at all costs, but
it's just the end of it. This is what happens. Like
this is the end.
It's the end. Like Bobby Wagner's probably going to get cut this offseason because of contract.
It actually it's painful to watch Bobby Wagner run around and throw his body around with the reckless abandon that he's doing for this team. He deserves better. Bobby Wagner should not have to suffer for this.
Jamal Adams broke the Seahawks. I'm just saying that because Dom's there.
Yeah. So they got they got sold a real false bill of goods
God,
on Jamal Adams.
Guy.
I was laughing yesterday. I'm like, there's Jamal Adams, playmaker.
What do you mean? Best in the nation, Jamal Adams.
At the goal line. He's an immensely talented guy, but when nobody can scheme him up properly to get the most out of him, he's Jadeveon Clowney all over again. All we ever heard about Clowney was, he's this great player, but it doesn't show up in stats. I'm like, it also didn't show up on the field half the time. Like, you can tell me that the guy's a great player, but if he's not a playmaker on defense, then you've got a major problem. Like, that touchdown that got reversed at the end of the game, where Adams was, now granted, it was like a 6'6" guy that he was trying to deal with there, but that's a play where it's like, key moment of the game, goal line stand, fourth down, game hanging in the balance, your self-proclaimed playmaker has got to go out and make a play, not wait for the call to be overturned on replay.
Thomas Drance is going to join us next to talk about the Vancouver Canucks. Gosh, I was thinking the other day, if not for the men's Canada men's soccer team, what would we have?
Mm-hmm. Well, we got our recreational sports.
No, we don't, though.
For now.
Those are falling apart, too. I tweeted out last night, I miss big games. We don't have enough big games with the teams that we support in this area of the world, unfortunately. Thomas Drance is going to join us at 7:30, so just in a few minutes. Lots of questions, obviously, about the Vancouver Canucks. I don't think anything changed just because they beat the Habs last night. It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
A little bit of housekeeping we need to do right now. One, a reminder that hour one of the podcast featuring Justin Bourne, former professional hockey player, and his father, a multiple Stanley Cup winner. We were talking about, the decline that a professional athlete goes through. And then when they turn into maybe an amateur recreational athlete like us, how hard it is to keep going, whether that competitive spirit stays alive, whether your body betrays you. All that conversation, as uplifting as it sounds, you can get the Hour One podcast right now. Apple, Google, Spotify.
I broke down emotionally on the radio.
That's right. You can listen to the whole first hour. If you missed any of that conversation, you'd like to hear more of it. There's a lot of people weighing in to the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650 right now with their tales of amateur athletics as they get older. Chris Ballard from Sports Illustrated is going to join us at 8:30 to talk about his cover piece. It was last month in October, but it was the cover story at SI. How long can we play inside the quest to prolong athletic mortality? He's going to be joining us at 8:30. That'll also be available via the podcast. The pod, as the kids call it. They don't call it that. What else do we need to do? Any other business we need to attend to here? Dom's just staring at me blankly. Come on, bud. What else? You got anything else?
No, you're good.
Is Drance on the line?
Yes.
Let's go to Thomas Drance from the Athletic Vancouver and the Canucks Hour here on Sportsnet 650. Oh, we've lost Drance. Someone did not pay the phone bill this month.
Why is everyone texting in about Messi? What happened with...
He won the Ballon d'Or yesterday.
That's pretty impressive. How old is he?
He is 34. Can you Google it up for me? Please stop. We got to stop accusing everyone. It's bad enough that you're trying to buy it on
the
black
market. Do you think Ovechkin's on HGH?
All right, please stop. Do not tag every aged athlete with HGH. We're going to get sued. Google how old Messi is real quick. I think he's 34. Messi won his...
You're Googler.
Can you just do it? I'm talking. Well, I'm talking here.
One of the guys behind to do.
Messi won his seventh Ballon d'Or, and I believe, well, I don't believe, I know, it's come under some scrutiny because it kind of felt like...
Because of the HGH.
The Lifetime Achievement Award for...
Oh, okay.
It was his last year at Barcelona, and right. It was the end of an era. Because really...
Do you think he'll go back to Barca?
No.
Eventually?
No.
No,
I
don't. That's
well,
done.
I mean, never say never. Mm-hmm. We have the.
He said he wants to.
Yeah, we have the Ronaldo reunion at Man United, so nothing's out of the question. It was very obvious that Robert Lewandowski should have won the award. Messi said it himself in accepting the award, but
he won it because he won his first, you know, Copa.
No, I know, but it felt like a lifetime achievement Ballon d'Or as opposed to winning it for what he did in the calendar year. Anyway, Lewandowski should have won it. He didn't. I guess that's what people want us to talk about.
Drance is ready.
And Thomas Drance is on the line now, joining us from the Athletic Vancouver.
He is 34.
Messi, not Drance. Drance, how old are you?
I am also, I was born in 87. I'm 34 as well. I'm the same age as Lionel Messi.
And you guys have both accomplished so much.
Yeah. I like that Lionel Messi won like the Al Pacino Incentable Woman Ballon d'Or.
Yes,
right?
that's what it was.
Classic career achievement one.
Yes.
The Drew Doughty Norris?
Yeah, yes. It's like, we didn't give this guy the Academy Award for The Godfather, but in this movie, he said, ooh-ah, like 18 times, so let's do it.
You know what I hate? I hate that movie is not looked upon favorably in retrospect, because I loved it when it came out. I was a big Scent of a Woman, like the speech at the private school.
Yeah.
Take a flamethrower to this place. I like that. That was good.
It's like the class. It's a great slow clap.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's like one of the classic, like, rousing moments at the end. But, I mean, all those guys, like, also Scorsese winning for The Departed.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's got some better movies than that on his resume, guys. Well done.
Was it Philip Seymour Hoffman who was, like, the spoiled, weaselly, rich kid
in
Scent of a Woman?
Yes. Yeah, one of his early roles.
He played that very well.
Yeah, he did. He was awesome.
Okay, Drance, we're clearly just stalling because it's the Canucks talk.
Let's go.
Yeah. Our poll question this morning is a little bit confusing, but intentionally so. The question is, do the Canucks need to rebuild the retool or just retool their retool? 43% of voters are saying rebuild, 34% are saying retool, and 23% do not understand the question.
Yeah, I mean, I think like a team like the Carolina Hurricanes, I think about this a lot. I think one advantage that they have is that they're just always building. It's not that you're rebuilding. It's not that you're retooling. It's that you're just always building, right? So you lose a player like Dougie Hamilton, which the Carolina Hurricanes did. And in the Canadian market, it's like, well, their window is closed, right? Like, time to rebuild, time to retool. And the Hurricanes instead are just like, yeah, you know, like, there's this $1 million guy named Anthony DeAngelo. He's available partly because no one likes him. He's legitimately the worst, but really talented offensively. And we can get Ethan Bear because the Edmonton Oilers, you know, don't think he's fit enough, regularly enough. And we can get him for Warren Fogle, who we weren't going to qualify anyway. And boom, you know, for the price of $3 million, we've replaced Dougie Hamilton in the aggregate. And they're still an elite team. And it's not about retooling or rebuilding. It's just like always be building, always be making smart moves to improve at the margins and enhance your flexibility and your, you know, arsenal assets. Like the Hurricanes, you know, you look at the Coyotes, right? And the Coyotes have 9 picks in the first two rounds of the 2022 entry draft, but they're terrible. They're terrible. The Hurricanes make like 15 picks a year and they're contending the whole time, right? They're always building. And that's kind of what you need to be. Like, that's kind of where you need to be, I think, these days. You need to be smart and lightweight and able to build like a third line on the fly, or, you know, constantly be looking for value defensemen to upgrade your lineup. Like, you know, this Canucks team can't build a blue line to save their lives. And for the price of basically Travis Hamonic, the Hurricanes replaced Dougie Hamilton, like the best offensive D in hockey. It's just maddening, because it's not about the big picture approach. It's just about being sharp and preserving flexibility and making the right moves. And, you know, the good organizations, the really consistent, well-run teams in this league do it year after year and accrue like small advantages over teams like the Canucks, who are the whale at the table. You know, I'm getting sick of watching it. I'm getting sick of watching it play out. And I just feel for fans that want this team to do better, because it's obvious. Like, it's obvious as it's playing out that the Canucks aren't going to hit the river card. And then they don't hit the river card, and everyone's like, oh, you know, what a shock. It's not a shock. Other players are counting cards. Anyway.
How many?
You know what?
That's a pretty good analogy. That's a pretty good analogy.
I love the theory of always be building. I think that's terrific, as opposed to being like, okay, we're here now, we're going to arrive there, and then what? Like, you still got to keep building. You still got to keep feeding the system with young players, cheap players, and you can't just be like, well, we don't have to worry about the draft for 5 years now. Like, that's not how to remain competitive in the NHL. Here's a question for you, Drantz. How many legit top four defensemen do the Canucks have?
Two.
Yeah. That seems like a problem.
Quinn Hughes and Oliver Ekman-Larsson, right? And
yeah.
And I mean, this is the one that, you know, and I think about the Boston game where they cough up the lead, right? And Oliver Ekman-Larsson gets penalized for the hit on Anton Bleed, and it's a soft penalty, in my opinion. But Bleed got hurt. You understand why it was called.
Soft because he spun into him, turned his back into him?
Yeah, but I mean, the player turned their back.
Yeah.
Last minute. Like, to me, that's not boarding, but it's borderline. Like, it's going to get called 50-50. And for a team like the Canucks that's reeling, it's like it's always going to get called. You know, when you're in the muck, right? When you're in the muck, those are the calls that go against you. So Ekman-Larsson goes to the box. Now, the Canucks don't use Quinn Hughes on the penalty kill. You can debate about whether or not the Canucks should use their skilled players more on the PK. From my perspective, like, what can it hurt at this point? It's not like it's going to get worse. But, you know, Quinn Hughes, and when you watch him play a stationary defensive game, when you look at how many blocked shots the Canucks defenders are asked to sort of chase in terms of fronting flankers when they're at 4-on-5, like, I understand why Quinn Hughes doesn't kill penalties. So Ekman-Larsson goes to the box, and this team doesn't have another lefty to put out in that spot. So you've got Marchand, Pasternak, Bergeron.
Versus
right?
Kyle Burrows.
Yeah, right. You've got, but yeah. You know, you've got, like, legitimately the killers. You know what I mean? Like, those guys are killers in this league. There's 3 minutes to go on the road, and Kyle Burrows playing, what, his 15th NHL game, is thrown out on his offside? Yeah, like, yeah, of course he got walked.
And then what happened?
Of course he got walked. Yeah, and then what happened? There's no surprise here. There's no surprise here. It's not like, oh, man, systems. You know, like, come on. What are we talking about? They're not good enough. And they're flawed. Like, I think what's coming back to me and annoying me the more I watch this team, and obviously I've been on the road and I've been, like, alone, so I'm a little bit unhinged at this point.
That's okay.
Having covered this
That's
road
okay.
trip. Yeah.
I think most Canucks fans are a little unhinged right now.
I mean, look at Canucks Twitter, right? Clearly this team is breaking everyone's brain just a little bit, or a lot. And as I watch this team play, like, you know, what upsets me so much about it is it's not about, like, oh, they should have known Tucker Pullman's not good if they just looked at, you know, the Jay Fresh player card. Like, they just done the analytics. You know, it's not like that. Like, that's not why they're failing. They're failing at meat and potato stuff, like the simple stuff, right? Like the old hockey guy stuff, the not having enough lefty penalty killers, the not having a right-handed draw. The fact that their young players haven't regressed. The fact that they're too small up front and too slow on the back end. Like, it's the basics.
They don't have enough good defensive players.
They don't have, yeah. Well, that's the other thing. They have two top four quality defensemen, but Quinn Hughes is, you know, not a one-way player by no means, but his two-way impact is derived from puck moving, not from in-zone defensive play. Mm. And Ekman-Larsson, like, Ekman-Larsson's a sturdy defensive player, but he's not Alex Edler. He's not, like, you know, an in-zone physical, mean defensive stopper. He's not an elite penalty killer, right? I mean, and Ekman-Larsson might be their only guy with meaningful two-way intelligence, right? Like, you don't win like that. You can't win like that. There's just not enough of the types of players you win with on this team. And, you know, I don't know what was expected. I know the organization's surprised by how this season has spun out of control so quickly, but, you know, this was always a realistic possibility with where their roster was at. Like, if your baseline is 85 to 90 points, you know, there's a one-third shot that you're going to be bad, like really bad. And you have to be prepared for that contingency, at least to the extent that, you know, you're not paralyzed as the Canucks have been over the course of the past 2.5 weeks, you know, with the season already lost.
Drancer, what's your theory on why ownership has been so patient with Jim Benning compared to they missed the playoffs 1 year, Nonis is gone. They missed the playoffs 1 year, Gillis is gone.
Well, something else must be happening, right? I mean, there must be something in terms of family and bigger business, like, considerations that have clouded the picture and limited the ability to control quality in the way that ownership did early on in their tenure. I mean, you know, that's my theory anyway. Like, my theory is that
Do you think it could be a relationship thing? Like, Francesco and Jim just get along really well?
I'm sure that's part of it. And I think part of the reason that both Mike and Dave Nonis didn't get the same type of rope, you know, was that there wasn't that type of personal connection. So I do think that's part of it. But I still think the extent to which this has gone on, like how long this has gone on and how long the results have been unacceptable, right? I mean, the Canucks are 26th in point percentage.
I just
Benning's
think of all the
tenure.
Money that's been wasted too. The money that's just been like set on fire, essentially. The Canucks have been a cap team.
No, I know. With every year, and I mean, if you look at salary expenditure, top 10 every year until the 2021 season, which was the pandemic season, right? And
in which... But back to it now, right?
At which point they dropped to the bottom five, right? And there's its own problems stem from that. But yeah, and I mean, if you look at it too, and I've got some numbers, I've been meaning to like crunch them and throw them into a spreadsheet. So these are sort of like not final numbers, but it looks to me like the Canucks are the third highest spending team in terms of lump sum payments since 2015-16. So over the last 7 years, they've had like the third most signing bonus paid out. And like number one is Chicago, who won a cup in that stretch. And number two is Toronto. I mean, it's like, it's baffling that they've been willing to chase poor results, bottom five in the NHL results at, you know, top 10 for sure. And probably a little bit higher, you know, cash outlay. I mean, it's literally, this is probably the team in the NHL that is the worst, the single worst, over a long sample, like a large sample of games, at buying wins. And that should always be your goal, right? You're not really buying players, or you shouldn't be. You should be trying to buy wins. And this team, this organization, has not had any success doing so over the course of the past 7 years. And why ownership has been so patient, why Benning is the second longest tenured general manager in franchise history, despite being 26th in the NHL in point percentage during his tenure, like, I cannot answer that question. It is a massive mystery.
Do you think they might be interested in Mark Bergevin?
Well, we'll see. I mean, Mark Bergevin's the ultimate win and get in GM, right?
Right.
So that would seem to match the overall view or the overall strategic guidance that pretty clearly Benning is operated under. You know, so yeah, I mean, could I see it? Sure. I think there's real questions about whether Bergevin has the appetite to go into another completely difficult, overwhelming hockey market like Vancouver, particularly with, you know, how well reported it is that he was pretty worn out toward the end of his Montreal tenure. But yeah, I mean, you know, he played for the Canucks for a bit. He was extremely popular for a guy for like a deadline acquisition within the organization. You can see how that would interest them. There's a very close relationship with Pat Brisson there. Pat Brisson, of course, represents some pretty important Canucks players. Mm-hmm. So especially if your goal is to build around this core, keep them intact, you know, there could be some interesting synergy or value there. And so, yeah, I mean, I could see it. I certainly could see it. It would make sense. A lot of the industry thinks that Canucks ownership is very high on Bergevin, but I don't know that. I haven't confirmed that. So, yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see it. I'm curious to see the fit overall. But for me, gentlemen, you know, I do think a president should come first. I think that there's no way. And like one thing that's annoying me as I'm watching this play out and as I'm watching how, you know, the fact that the club's actively trying, well, the fact, the reports indicate that the club is trying to replace Travis Green actively. And I think that's obvious at this point. And, you know, yet he's still being trotted out. He's still the only one really talking to the media.
Yeah.
You know, there's meaningful doubts within the industry about how much autonomy Benning has to make a trade or to pick his own coach. And so, you know, you get to this position where all of these essential Canucks personnel, like high-ranking leaders, you know, are being put in a pretty unfair spot here. And you contrast that with, like, the Tampa Bay Lightning. You contrast that with an organization where you've got a general manager and four AGMs, all of whom have been with the organization for 7 years or more, right? And you just look at, like, the loyalty, the stability, you know, how they're set up, and you contrast that with how this organization seems to habitually treat even its top executives, and it's just like, how are you ever competing with that team if this is how you operate? And that, for me, is why you, like, they need to rebuild their hockey operations department, and it's going to take a president. It's going to take someone with meaningful education and business experience, and yes, a hockey background too, but that's sort of secondary, to build Canucks hockey operations into the type of, you know, collaborative, dynamic organization capable of competing with the best, most run, well-run teams in an increasingly complicated and sophisticated league.
We're speaking to Thomas Drantz from the Athletic Vancouver and the Canucks Hour right here on Sportsnet 650. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show. We've talked about the Montreal moves quite a bit on this show, and it's an interesting, I keep saying juxtaposition, but it's not. It's an interesting comparable because both teams are bad. They both came into last night with 6 wins. Montreal's made these sweeping changes over the weekend, and if you're a Canuck fan, you're kind of like that meme where the guy's poking something with a stick, and you're like, come on, do stuff, do something, and you're waiting, and you're waiting, and you're waiting. With regards to what the Habs have done, are you of the same mind as me that you bring in Jeff Gorton and you give him this kind of power to do the, what did you call it, the honest rebuild, the most honest rebuild ever? You bring him in to do that again, essentially?
Well, he is the NHL's most honest rebuilder. Yeah. And I mean, they sent that letter, right? That's sort of what I'm referencing. But it was the Rangers pulled the chute on a season in which they were in a playoff spot.
Yeah, they were 1 point out when he wrote that letter. 1 point out of a playoff spot, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and Alain Vigneault blasted them. They fired Alain Vigneault, and they took a massive step back and, you know, accumulated some pretty good players. You know, now they've changed direction again in New York, and they're in a playoff spot now based on their goaltending. Shesterkin's incredible, but I don't think they're a particularly imposing side. But yeah, I mean, I just appreciate, like, it's so rare in hockey that an organization is just like, cards on the table, this is what we're going to do, and then they go about doing it. Yeah. You know, I can't even think of another example where a team's been that straight up, and I think it matters. I think fans are excited to be leveled with, and I think fans are willing to invest in a team that goes through an honest process, so long as, you know, the work rate stays on the ice, and they see the team doing smart things. I think I think fans are actually often a lot more patient than ownership, as showed in New York, to be totally honest with you, right? Where, you know, Tom Wilson just basically ruined the NHL's most honest rebuild single-handedly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's an interesting direction. Montreal has not, you know, done that. They've really been focused on building, like, playoff caliber teams that were almost so playoff, like, so built for the playoffs that they struggled to get there. And then were tough out when they did because they had all the beef and they had, you know, some of those skills that matter when the NHL game changes, you know, sort of arbitrarily, and because that's how the powers that be want it to be as arbitrary as possible in the playoffs.
It's not arbitrary when it happens every year, and your Leafs should heed that lesson.
Yeah, okay. I mean, Sure. You support the
I don't support it. I don't support it. I live in reality.
You guys live in reality. Stop. Neither of you can't start this 3 minutes before a break. The timing doesn't work. It doesn't work with the clock that we have laid forth. Drance, before you guys get going, I'm gonna let you go. If you want to pick this up, you can do it at 11 o'clock till noon with Jamie Dodd on the Canucks Hour right here on Sportsnet 650. Thank you very much for doing this. We appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the trip. We'll talk again next week.
Yep, thanks, boys.
Thanks, buddy.
Enjoy.
Thank you. That's Thomas Drance from the Athletic Vancouver here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
I just know Drance is going to stew about that.
Yeah, I know. You threw it in his brain, in his mind grapes. Mm-hmm. Now he's got to deal with it for the rest of the hour and subsequent hours. I do want to say one thing. Some people were pushing back when I was talking about the New York Rangers rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, does your rebuild include fluking into a first overall pick? And then getting a Norris-caliber defenseman only wanting to play for your franchise. I understand that there's nuances and subtleties to
luck.
And luck.
Yep.
I'm not even saying that you should do this, what the Rangers did. What I'm saying is that's a blueprint. That's a plan. I don't think you're understanding quite what I'm talking about here. Just the idea of having a thorough and detailed and nuanced plan.
Mm-hmm.
And executing it is a good thing. If it fails, at least you can say, I had an idea. I did the things I wanted to do. We didn't deviate from it. What I came in with is what I'm going out with. I understand that you might need to make adjustments on the fly and you might need to alter the plan. But to have one in the first place is a very important thing. And that's something that I find lacking a lot of times. We're going to go, coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to do what we learned next. And then at 8:30, we're going to talk to Chris Ballard from Sports Illustrated. He's got a terrific piece out. It was actually October's cover story called How Long Can We Play? Talking about trying to find that athletic longevity and trying to avoid that athletic mortality that a lot of us weekend warriors, soccer, hockey, slow pitch, whatever, are trying to stave off. When do I have to stop playing? So we're going to talk to Chris Ballard about his piece. It's really interesting. We've got a ton of text into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. People weighing in with, you know, their plight against athletic mortality. Guys that are still slugging it out, trying to battle through all the injuries. And then those that have said, yeah, the injuries have kept me from going.
The official financial sponsor of Halford & Brough is ZLC Financial. It's your one-stop solution for all your financial and retirement needs in Vancouver. To learn more, visit zlc.net. And remember, advice is only as good as the person you ask.
Yeah, this boy's soul is intact. It's non-negotiable. You know how I know? Someone here, and I'm not going to say who, offered to buy it. Only Charlie here wasn't selling.
Sir, you're out of order.
Out of order? I show you out of order. You don't know what out of order is, Mr. Trask. I'd show you, but I'm too old. I'm too tired. I'm too blind. If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.